Please rise. Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Smith, Judge Bradfold, the Honorable Kevin Ross presiding.
Please be seated. Good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals for this January 30th panel. We have four oral arguments on our calendar today. The first case is a resolution non-renewing probationary teaching contract. Counsel, each of you will have 15 minutes to present your arguments with an additional 5 minutes to relater if you'd like to use that time for please be mindful of those timing restrictions, which are the clock is indicated in the lectern along with a light that would indicate when your time has expired. Please be respectful of your time, and you can raise or lower the lectern at your convenience. There's a button right in front. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument for the benefit of the audio recording of the proceedings. And with that, counsel for relator, whenever you are ready to proceed, you have the floor.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Paula Johnston, and I am counsel for relator Emily Bellamy. In 2023, the continuing contract law was amended by the addition of subsection 5F, which states that a teacher who has taught for 3 consecutive years in a single school district or a single charter school or district in another state must serve a probationary period of no longer than 1 year in a Minnesota school district. This law was enacted to give teachers like the relator who have experience teaching in charter schools credit for that experience. Prior to teaching in the Hermantown district, Ms. Bellamy taught for 4 full years at the Edison North Star Academy, which is a charter school in Duluth. She then taught for 2 consecutive years in Hermantown, and for both of those positions, she was a speech and language pathologist. She's a dedicated educator that has 10 years of experience in this field, in which she does the important work of assessing and treating students' speech and communication language needs, collaborating with teachers, parents, and administrators, creating IEPs, and guiding parents and staff to support communication development both in and out of the classroom.
You don't dispute that, notwithstanding that extensive experience, that but for the change in legislation, there would be no contest?
But for the change in legislation?
Yes.
Correct, yes. Yes. But pursuant to the change in legislation, she attained continuing contract status on July 1st, 2023. Now, the parties agree that this amendment is not retroactive, but it does apply in real time. And on June 10th, 2024, which was the date of Ms. Bellamy's purported non-renewal, this is a law that was in effect, and on that date, she met the 2 requirements of the amendment, which was 1, serving at least 3 consecutive years in a charter school, and 2, serving a probationary period of no longer than 1 year in a Minnesota school district. So the legislature, it knows to make, its intent to regarding retroactivity clear. It knows how to do that. One of the cases that the respondent district relies on in its brief is instructive on this point. That is the Parrish v. Quay case, and that dispute regarded an amendment to the law regarding public service commission terms, the length of terms. The plaintiff in that case, the amendment extended the terms for new members to 6 years. The plaintiff in that case was a current member of a public service commission, and he argued that his term should be extended to 6 years. However, the legislature made its intent clear in that statute that current members, it literally states current members, would serve out the rest of their elective or appointive terms. And then it stated that thereafter, the terms of subsequent members would be 6 years. So using those markers like thereafter and subsequent members made clear that the amendment extending terms did not apply to current members.
So can I ask, if we look at, so our focus is on subdivision 5F, right?
Correct.
And so why don't we read in the effective date in that, I mean, which I think is fair to do. So notwithstanding any law to the contrary, effective July 1, 2023, that's the effective date, right? So notwithstanding any law to the contrary, effective July 1, 2023, a teacher who has taught for 3 consecutive years in a single school district or a single charter school in Minnesota or another state must serve a probationary period of no longer than 1 year. So effective that date, and I think the argument is, okay, well then the next year will be a 1 year probationary period, as I understand the argument. And your argument is, no, the prior year should count, the prior year probationary period in the district court. Wouldn't that have been accomplished if it said, notwithstanding any law to the contrary, effective July 1, 2023, a teacher who has taught for 3 consecutive years in a charter school must serve or must have served a 1 year probationary period. I mean, that would capture the previous year's probationary period. But I understand the argument from the respondent that it's a forward-looking provision and that, you know, the person who was in on June 30th was in a 3-year probationary period, now has to serve 1 year. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, it would certainly have been easier had the legislature been more clear in writing the language. But the date that Ms. Bellamy's non-renewal was attempted or purported to occur, this is the law that was in effect. And just as the 3 years in the Minnesota Charter School were to take place before the effective date of the statute, and so too does the 1 year. If we kind of, the district appears to agree that the 3 years of charter school experience can take place before the effective date of July 1st, 2023, but objects to the 1 year of teaching service in a school district taking place after that date. And we argue that draws an arbitrary line between those two requirements. And neither have to be retroactive in order for Ms. Bellamy to have gained continuing contract status.
But can you address specifically the verbiage issue, the tense that's used, the must serve as a prospective? Do you have an argument specifically as to the language?
Sure. Must is not a command. We argue must is not a command to do something in the future. It only, that language must and that verb means that a teacher must, after having served the 3 consecutive years in a charter school, they must serve a 1 year probationary period at a school district. So we don't think that it is a forward command. And the statute cited in the respondent's brief, which defines must as mandatory, does not at all require the probationary period to occur after the effective date. It just means that...
So the word must. I'm talking about the combination of must serve as opposed to must have served, going to Judge Smith's question.
Again, it would have been more clear had the legislature written it that way, but we think that it is the law that just as the 3 years in a charter school can occur before, so too can the 1 year probationary period. And that the date to evaluate the law in effect was the date that Ms. Bellamy's teaching contract was purportedly non-renewed.
So, counsel, I'd like to step back just a little bit and talk about how this section, how 5F was adopted. And I realize none of that would be relevant if we go with the plain language of the statute, which I am hearing mostly or reading in the briefs. And I think it's true of your party's position that the statute can be interpreted as it is plainly written. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't require legislative history. But just if you don't mind humoring me. Subdivision 5F was adopted after this court's decision in what everyone's calling the Lockrum case. There are some references in your brief, I think, to saying it may have been in response to the Lockrum case. I'm not quite sure you go that far, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. Is there anything in the legislative history that suggests that, or it's just a chronologically it happened after
There is nothing in the legislative history that suggests that that was the case.
Okay. That sounds good. That's what I thought, but okay. I just wanted to make sure or at least find out your position on it. And then the second thing I was trying to understand is when it comes to looking at 5F and 5A, so the probationary period, and I'm really just talking about the first part of probationary period in 5A, which is what Lockram looked at.
Mm-hmm.
So that probationary period, you know, captured in the first sentence. So I guess this is what I want to ask you. Let's assume Ms. Bellamy's prior experience, she had at least 3 years of experience, not in a charter school, but in a different single school district in mm-hmm. Minnesota, and so therefore fell under 5A. How would that affect this case? And I realize that's hypothetical. That's not our facts, but how would that affect your argument in this case? Would the school district have been able to non-renew as it did, or how does 5A work?
So had Ms. Bellamy fallen under subdivision A, no, the district would not have been able to non-renew Ms. Bellamy after the 2023-2024 school year, because she had already worked a full year, the 2022-2023 school year. So once July 1st passed of 2023 and they gave her a new contract for 2024, she would have been continuing contract. And I want to
I'm trying to get really back to what Judge Smith and Judge Ross were asking you to look at is the way this must serve language is in 5F as opposed to the sentence in 5A where it says that, let's see, it's a long sentence, but the probationary period in each district in which the teacher is thereafter employed shall be 1 year, so that's also a shall, mm-hmm. but it apparently you're telling me it would say if she has that experience, she's credited with it more.
Okay. No, Ms. Bellamy started with the Hermantown School District, the Respondent School District, for the 2022-2023 school year. So if she had fallen under subdivision A, she would have needed a 1 year probationary period at Hermantown. But I want to point out,
right?
Which she had, yes. Yeah. I want to point out that subdivision A uses that marker of thereafter must serve a 1 year probationary period in another school district. And subdivision 5F does not use that language. And I think it is important that to note those differences and the interpretation should reflect that.
So how do you address the argument or the thought, the thread, that the legislature has very clearly differentiated the additional 1 year probationary period that's expressed in 5A as opposed to 5F. So 5A being phrased as something, you know, just shall be 1 year, can be something already completed, whereas 5F is a shall serve as of, you know, as we just discussed with an effectiveness date.
So if I'm understanding your question,
mm-hmm. And I may not have said it very well.
Well, I'm going to try to restate it, and you can tell me if I'm understanding it. Are you asking if subdivision 5A, in that case, if a person has committed, a teacher has taught for 3 years in a single school district and then goes to another school district, they have 1 year of probation, and she had completed that 2022-2023. But the difference is that subdivision 5A, it says thereafter must, in any school district thereafter must serve a 1 year probationary period. And it's just like the markers in the
It's not a must serve, though. It's a shall be 1 year.
Okay, but
still
thereafter.
5A has been interpreted by this court in the Long case, you know.
Sure.
Right, so I realize that.
Sure. It states that thereafter shall be a 1 year probationary period.
It says, yes, it does. Is thereafter employed? It's a reference back to the second school district, I think, as opposed to the year, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is where the probationary service, the 1 year probation would be served.
Right. I'm doing it very inartfully, but trying to ask you to compare the two provisions. Note that one treats teachers who have 3 years of experience in a single school district, and one, 5F, is specifically related to 3 years of experience, for instance, in a single charter school. That's what's relevant in our particular case. And it is different, right? The subsequent probation, the language is different. So did the legislature intend that?
We
assume so, right?
We believe it did. The way that it is written, we argue that having served the 3 years in the charter school and then the 2022-2023 school year in Hermantown, she then gained continuing contract status. We believe that that is the way that it is written. It does not contain any markers that suggest that the 1 year...
So what import do we give in 5F to the no longer than 1 year in a Minnesota school district?
Well, that comes into play in that the respondent's argument would require her to serve a 2 year probationary period or more, depending on if they are arguing that the full 3 years would still need to apply. But, without having served 1 year in Hermantown, we think it violates that statute to require her to serve an additional year because Subdivision 5F states that the probationary period shall be no longer than 1 year.
Go ahead.
I was going to say my time is running out, but...
Oh, I didn't even realize. May I ask a question?
Yes, certainly.
What is the point in 5F of including in a single school district? Does it just repeat the requirement that's already present in 5A, which is 3 years?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe that what the intent is that for either the charter school or a single school district in a different state, that it be 3 consecutive years at one school. Or at one district, I should say.
Oh, so it's another state is different in 5F. It's not in 5A.
Correct.
For the single district.
Absolutely, yep.
Thank
that
you.
Was an additional.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. You will have 5 additional minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, my name is John Edison. I'm the attorney for the respondent, Independent School District number 700, Hermantown. And, Your Honors, this case is really about, I look at it as an issue where the legislature basically created a new probationary period that applies to teachers like Ms. Bellamy who have taught for 3 or more years in a school district. And in talking about this, I think it's important to dissect Section 122A.40 as a whole, because with interpreting statutes, we're required to read things together as part of the canons of construction. And so, as we know from the Lockrum case, with respect to the language in Subdivision 5A, there's that the language that was discussed earlier this morning where the first 3 consecutive years a teacher teaches in a single Minnesota district is a probationary period. If a teacher does that and then goes to work for a different school district, then they have to work a 1 year probationary period. And we know from Lockrum that district, as it's used in that subdivision, does not include a charter school. So during the 2022-2023 school year, it cannot be disputed that Ms. Bellamy was subject to a 3 year probationary period under the Lockrum decision. So then the legislature amended the statute to create Subdivision 5F, and that created a new requirement or a new standard for charter school teachers or teachers who have charter school experience. And it says, as was noted today, that a teacher in that position must serve a probationary period of a year or no more than a year. And so the question that we're talking about today is, when is this 1 year probationary period served, and can that be served before the effective date of the amendment to the statute? And the answer to that question is no, it can't. And I'm going to talk about that. But before I do that, the reason it's important is because when you look at what the continuing contract law says about when someone attains continuing contract status, and this maybe should have been discussed a little more in our brief, but I'll talk about it now. In Subdivision 7, Paragraph A, the prerequisite to getting a continuing contract is that you have to complete a probationary period. It says at the very first few words of that paragraph are, a teacher who has completed a probationary period in any district, and then goes on to say, subject to some conditions, shall elect to have a continuing contract. And so timing-wise, I think it's important to talk about the timing of all of this too, because for school boards, under paragraph 5A, if they're gonna non-renew the contract of a probationary teacher, they have to make that decision before July 1st, 2023, because the notice to the affected teacher has to go out before that deadline. So in this case, all of the actions that took place that led to Ms. Bellamy continuing to work for the school district during the 23-24 school year took place before the effective date of the statute. And that's critical here. And, you know, we talked before about language and how this is a confusing subdivision. I agree with that. I think the effective date of it is particularly confusing. And I want to
Is it ambiguous, counsel, the effectiveness date language?
I think it is. And the reason for that is because if you look at what the session law says it was effective for collective bargaining agreements effective July 1st, 2023. And that's extremely difficult to apply in the context of collective bargaining agreements for teachers, because under the Public Employment Labor Relations Act, there's a contract in effect provision that says that, well, there's two things that are addressed there. One, it says for teachers' collective bargaining agreements that they run in a two-year term that starts on July 1st on odd-numbered years. So we have that, but then we also have a provision that talks about how if a new contract isn't negotiated, the old contract continues in effect until a new one is put in place. And that's what happened here, where the teachers' bargaining unit in the school district did not negotiate a new collective bargaining agreement until February of 2024.
But does that ambiguity really go to the relator's argument? I mean, I think the relator would have this say the same argument whether it was July 1, 2023 or February 2024. The question is whether 2223 satisfies the one-year probationary period, right?
Yep, and I think it does, and I'll pose two hypotheticals where I think this point is illustrated. So the first hypothetical that I'll pose is, let's say we have the same set of facts, and Ms. Bellamy's contract was not non-renewed before July 1st, 2023, and she continued working for the school district in 23-24. So let's say that in the fall of 2023, before the parties ratified their new collective bargaining agreement, there was some serious act of misconduct that Ms. Bellamy did. Obviously that didn't happen, but let's say that did happen and the district said, you know what, we can't wait till the end of the year to deal with the situation. We have to take action to terminate this contract now. My question for relator's side is, what standard would apply to the district for terminating the contract, because there's two different standards under the continuing contract law for dealing with a probationary contract and terminating it midterm. There's language in subdivision 5A that says that there's a cause requirement that applies in a hearing process, but it is very different than the robust protections that apply to someone who has continuing contract rights. For someone who has continuing contract rights, there's a standard in Subdivision 9 and Subdivision 13 that talk about terminating the continuing contract. So my question is, would those apply? I don't see how they could with the way that effective date is written. And then another hypothetical to further illustrate this would be...
So I'm not following why it would be different because of the way that effectiveness date is written, what you just said.
Because what they're saying, their whole argument is that she had a continuing contract on July 1st, 2023. The point I'm trying to make is if that were true, the scenario I described would create a situation where she would have rights, the due process protections that a continuing contract teacher would have, when in all actuality, there would not have been a collective bargaining agreement in effect.
And that might have been a fight had there been some misconduct in September of 2023 or October or something like that. But I think the argument is by the time of the non-renewal in spring of 2024, whether it's a contract date or the July 1, you know, at that point there was a continuing contract in place because of the 2023 probationary period that was served. I mean, I understand your argument, and there might be ambiguity that creates all sorts of other issues with teachers who might be in the situation that you're describing. But I think here the issue is at the time of the non-renewal in the spring of 2024, right? The argument is the one-year probationary period was served in 2022-23. I guess I don't know what you think the effective date is. Maybe you could tell us that. And why it matters to the ambiguity in this case. So the ambiguity, if any, and I think there might be some, I don't know, but is what it means to say must serve a probationary period, more so than when the effective date is. Because it seems like you have the same question, whether it's July 1, 2023 or February 2024.
Yeah, Your Honor, I'll address that question by... So I guess in terms of what the exact effective date is, I think that's extremely confusing. But what I will say is we know it can't be earlier than July 1st, 2023, and it certainly wasn't July 1st, 2022. Because when you look at the session laws from that time period, you know, within the same chapter and article, there was a provision that we cited in our brief where it had to deal with eligibility for come-to-teach grants, and the legislature said there.
Right. I don't think that the relator is arguing that the effective date was prior to July 1, 2023. Right. I think then the question is, if we all agree that at the earliest, I think, unless I can hear differently on rebuttal, the earliest is July 1, 2023, was the must serve a probationary year satisfied by the 2022-2023 probationary year in the district?
Your Honor, my response to that is no, and there's a case that I think illustrates that point. And we cited it in our brief. It wasn't fleshed out as much as I'm going to flesh it out now. It's the George Ben Sons case from the 1940s. And I think that this case touches on the exact point you raised, because it raises the question of when do you have to serve the probationary period, and can you do it before the effective date of the statute? In the George Ben Sons case, there was a law that was passed in 1945 that had to do with rights to branding for intoxicating liquor. And this new amendment to the statute said that if you don't sell your brand of liquor in Minnesota for 3 years, you abandon your rights to the label. And so these two companies got into a dispute over who had the rights to this blue ribbon label for whiskey. And they went through an administrative hearing process, and one of the parties prevailed and had the rights. The party that lost out on the rights challenged that and tried to argue that for 3 years or more before 1945, that this other company hadn't been selling blue ribbon whiskey in Minnesota and therefore abandoned its rights to the label. That was the argument. And that's what the facts were, because this was around World War II, so that just wasn't happening. It was undisputed. And what the court did when it looked at, so the question was, when does this 3 year period apply in terms of when you would have to not be selling blue ribbon whiskey in Minnesota in order to abandon your rights? And can we look back before the effective date of the statute and include that within the 3 year period? And the Supreme Court said no, that if you did that, that would be an improper retroactive application of the law, that there was no intention by the legislature to do that. And so the clock for the 3 year period to start ticking, so to speak, started in April of 1945 when that law was enacted. And that's exactly the argument I'm making here, where, you know, so we agree that the statute was not, that there's no indication that it applies retroactively. And so now the question, and this was addressed in another case we talked about in our brief, the Sleto case, where another question we have to ask is the way that the relator is asking for this to be applied retroactive?
And to be clear, I believe your argument is not that the experience of 3 years of charter school experience could predate the effective date, right? So this teacher moved from, in the district's view, a 3 year probationary period to essentially, they had to non-renew the year they did it, which would have been year two of a 3 year, but instead they did have to non-renew then, right?
Correct.
Experience is counted. It's not the charter school experience that can't be counted. It's just about the when you start triggering or measuring the probationary period from.
Yes, Your Honor. And that's where, you know, with respect to the verb tense argument, I won't argue that she would have to go back and work for charter school for 3 years again. And then, with respect to the timing of the non-renewal, I mean, this goes back to the ambiguity in the effective date. I mean, could the district argue that maybe it could have gotten by another year? I mean, maybe, but I think going with the time period the district did was the safest approach for the district to be certain that it was still acting within the probationary period, in our view.
So, Council, I'd like to ask you the same question that I asked Relators Council about assuming that Ms. Bellamy's prior experience was with a single school district, and so she fell under 5A instead of 5F. Same facts. Would she have had a continuing contract as of the date that the school district gave her a notice of non-renewal?
So that definitely creates an interesting wrinkle, and I think she would if her experience was in a single Minnesota district.
I want you to assume that.
Yeah, right. And the reason I say that is because, and this goes back to the point I made about subdivision 7A, which it says that if you've worked a probationary period in any Minnesota district, then you're eligible for continuing contract rights. And
the Long case is pretty clear on that, right?
It is.
That was tested, I think, in that case. Yeah. Okay.
And so my argument, because as you were asking that question, I hadn't thought about that as much before you raised the question. And I suppose a teacher might say, you know, well, I worked here for 3 years. I have a continuing contract. Now does this new statute say I have to work another year probationary period? And that's where I'd say that, you know, no, I would say I don't think you do, because you worked the probationary period under subdivision 5A, and the statute that talks about continuing contract rights, that says if you satisfy a probationary period, you can get continuing contract rights.
So, you know, in light of that, and as I commented to Relators Council, clearly the legislature chose very different language when it wrote 5F, right? It is different from 5A. What do we make of this no longer than 1 year? As you heard Relator's argument, that your interpretation of 5F effectively means that Ms. Bellamy, at least, has to have 2 1-year probationary periods.
And, that, Your Honor, that to me gets to the piece about my argument that it's really a new probationary period requirement. And so I agree. It says what it says.
Just what the legislature meant, and they're differentiating between charter school experience and single school district experience?
Yeah. I mean, I think, as a practical matter, in terms of the way that's been applied over time, I think everyone has gone by the it's a year. And if you have, you know, if you were previously subject to the one-year language under subdivision 5A, I think that you know, everyone operated with the understanding that it wouldn't be longer than that. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully that answered your question. And I see that I'm out of time, so I...
Thank you.
Thank you.
Council correspondent.
Thank you. Ooh, goodness.
Yeah, you might want to... There's a button in front. You can lower the...
Where is it?
It's in the...
There you are.
All right, thank you. So, if you
could restate your name just for the...
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Paula Johnston. I'm attorney for Relator Emily. The date at issue is June 10th, 2024, and that is the date that Ms. Bellamy was purportedly non-renewed. I agree exactly with the way that Judge Smith phrased our argument, that it was on that date that this amendment was in effect on that date. And so Ms. Bellamy had completed the two requirements of subdivision 5F. I think the hypothetical about what standard would be used if she were terminated, and the standard would be the standard that a tenured teacher would apply to a continuing contract teacher. She had attained continuing contract status at that point. And
The amendment states only that a teacher who has taught for 3 consecutive years in a single charter school must serve a probationary period of no longer than 1 year. It does not say that a teacher who has served 3 years in a 3 continuous years in a charter school must thereafter serve 1 year. Those markers that exist in 122A and in the Parrish case, they don't exist in subdivision 5F. And we believe that has to mean that just as the charter school experience can take place prior to the effective date, so too can the 1 year. Now, we're not arguing, of course, that had the district non-renewed Ms. Bellamy in the 2022-2023 school year, that, you know, that they couldn't do that. They absolutely could. That was her probationary year. We're simply arguing that on the date that they purportedly non-renewed her, she had met the requirements of the law that was in effect on that date. The locker room case, you know, we, as we discussed earlier, we don't have any legislative history to show that this amendment was enacted in response to that case. It is certainly possible, given the timing. The locker room case came out in February. The law was passed in spring and was signed into law by Governor Walz, I believe, on May 4th. So it is possible, but the fact of the matter is that the language in Subdivision 5F states that a teacher in Ms. Bellamy's situation would serve no longer than 1 year probation. And the respondent, this is not a new probationary period. This would be an extension of a probationary period that was not agreed to by the parties. So our argument is that on June 10th, 2024, the Subdivision 5F was in effect. She did meet the 2 requirements of that statute, and she had continuing contract status at that time. I think if the...
I wonder if it's ambiguous, let's say, and I appreciate the discussion. It's been helpful to think about what it means for someone who... what this was meant to do relative to 5A for teachers in the... who had school district experience. You know, it's not meant to undermine and suddenly make them prospectively serve another probationary period if they already served one, versus charter school who didn't have teachers, who didn't have that right to a 1 year. But so if there's ambiguity, like I think the policy argument that I heard, if we looked at that and what it's intended to do, is, I mean, at the time of the first year, 22-23, it was the teacher was in a 3-year period. It would have forced them to terminate early before perhaps whatever issues that they saw or development or whatever could be worked out. It just seems to force a termination early for a teacher in that circumstance that might not have been in even a teacher's interest or this district's.
There's 2 parts to my answer to that. I would not go so far as to say that the statute is ambiguous. I don't, you know, it could have been written more clearly, but I don't think it is ambiguous. Second, the 1-year probationary period, that is what exists currently for teachers who serve 3 years in a Minnesota school district and go to another school district. The district has to make a decision.
For sure. They know they have to make a decision.
They do. And in this case, I would argue that the district knew they needed to make a decision. The law was enacted in spring and signed into law in May. They had ample time to review Ms. Bellamy's record and make a determination. And in the record, you'll see her observation reports from that year. Okay, I think I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both for your argument. Very interesting case, very well briefed and well argued. We appreciate the representation. Your client certainly should appreciate the representation they've received.
Thank you very much.
The matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you both.